The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Jimmy Himes along with Vince Farrar. Vince filling in for John Wilkerson. Vince, hope you had a great weekend.
I did, Jimmy. We had the most sports we've had on our television sets in a very, very long time. And I personally didn't take it for granted. And it was really, really fun to take all that sports in. Hope you had a great weekend.
I did. And it certainly was a great weekend and did watch a lot of sports as well. So, we're getting back to having more and more, and I know a lot of folks are happy about that, including the two of us. All right, we got a lot coming your way. Now, Rob Lewis, who typically joins us on Monday, has a conflict, so he's not going to be able to join us. Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN is going to join us. His appearance brought to you by New Balance, so he'll be our only guest. But, man, do we have a lot of topics to cover. There is so much going on out there in the sporting world. So we will go ahead and jump to that and tell you that our news and notes are brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people you can trust. So, from Friday with our interview with Philip Fulmer, I do want to get your take on some of these things, Vince. First off, in recapping the schedule, he indicated that, yes, they could go with the next two cross-division opponents, which for Tennessee is Ole Miss and LSU, but he also said strength of schedule could be a component of what they're looking at. Which one would you favor off the top?
Off the top, probably the 2021 and 2022 crossovers, Jimmy, because I was trying to piece together how the puzzles would work in a strength of schedule, and I laid it all out. And even having all the info in front of me, it's not as easy to do as you think. So just because someone has the easiest current schedule right now doesn't automatically mean that it's going to work out smoothly and easily to where they can have the most difficult two games added to their schedule. It is hard to piece all those puzzle pieces and put them together, Jimmy. So I think people are going to be unhappy either way. I just think the easiest thing. Yeah, I know. We're used to it, though. Even during a pandemic, can't cut down on the complaining. But I would slightly favor the crossover, but it's not a huge thing for me where I'm really against one and for the other. I just think the crossover is a little bit easier to manage, but you know, we'll see what the SEC's computers or whatever else could spit out to get it as close as possible. If they can accomplish that, then I'll be fine with that. What about you?
Well, I favor going with your next two crossovers. And look, I understand that Florida's not happy because they have to add Alabama and Texas A&M. Those are on paper two of the four best teams in the West Division. So that's a heck of a hill to climb for Florida. On the other hand, I don't know that there is a completely fair way to do it. You also have situations where somebody in this league is going to be better than you think, and somebody in this league is going to be worse than you think. Yep. And when that happens, that creates an imbalance that you just cannot get around. So we will see. There is a part of me, though, that I think about this. Would I like to see Tennessee play Auburn, because that was a rivalry game played every year from 1956 to 1991? Yes, I would. I'd like to see Tennessee play Auburn. Would I like to see him get A&M back on that schedule more than just twice in 12 years? Yes. So I'm kind of tempted to think, well, that's not a bad direction to go. So I wouldn't be upset if you replaced LSU with Auburn or you replaced LSU with Texas A&M, either one of those. But the other thing, too, and I think it would be wise if the first six games that are played, you play your division opponents. That's in case there's a stoppage or a shutdown at some place. At least you can get all your division games in, and you have a truer outlook on who your division champion is. And then you play your West Division opponents the last 4 weeks of the season. And if you only play eight games, and maybe the two that you missed are West opponents. So I would, right. I would look at trying to schedule it that way. I would want to get in every game I could against my East opponent or West opponent if I'm in one of those divisions.
I agree with that. And if that happens, Jimmy, maybe you can take some credit for it for asking Philip Fulmer about it, because he said they hadn't really discussed it yet and that he might bring that up. So if that shoots up the ladder and gets approval across the board, I mean, I think there's a little bit of credit that should go to you for asking that question. But I'm with you. I like doing that and setting it up that way. I don't know if the SEC wants to start from scratch in terms of the whole schedule, or if they'll try to keep as many dates as possible, fill in the West where there might be holes that it might work. I don't think that's going to be a perfect deal either. But, yeah, there's so many scenarios. We'll talk more about it later on.
Yeah. All right. Let's hop on some other notes out there. I thought this one was really intriguing. Pac-10 players, it said as many as 400. I'm not sure if I believe that. First off, it's kind of hard to get 400 people to get on a conference call. But anyway, a lot of players from the Pac-12 are considering not playing if certain demands aren't met. Some of those demands include 2% revenue for financial aid for low-income black athletes. They also want it for developmental programs and community initiatives. They want to make sure that there are safety protocols that they approve. They want to distribute 50% of the revenue among athletes in their sports. Well, that's not going to happen because that's paying the players. So you're not going to get that. They want to eliminate excessive expenses with pay cuts for coaches and administrators. A lot of schools are already looking at doing that. They also want to have social injustices addressed as well. Now, Jay Williams said something, and I still continue to disagree with this premise. He said, these players, it's free labor. No, it's not. They're getting a scholarship. Some of these scholarships are valued at $40,000 to $60,000 a year. It's not free labor. Are they paid cash to do it? No. But it is not free labor. Get off of that, Jay Williams and others. So anyway, I don't know. One thing that was asked, Vince, is who's going to take the argument on behalf of these players to the NCAA or to the Pac-12 to say, okay, this is our presentation, and if you don't agree with this, we're out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the answer to that, Jimmy. Maybe that's something that they try to pursue, but there's nothing constructed. There's no organization to speak on their behalf. So I don't know the answer to it, but I think you pointed it out. These are things that take time to implement in the sport. To say you're not going to play this year until these things are alleviated, it's just no way of turning it over. Oh, by the way, we're in a pandemic and everybody's just trying to get on the field right now. Are these things that are worth discussion on how to improve the student-athlete experience? Yes, regardless of what you think about paying players. However, right now, let's focus on the health and safety and get this season going, because those other things are not going to change right away and can't be implemented right away. Yeah. So it's tough to group all these things in there together. I'm glad they have a voice and they can stand up for themselves and express themselves, but you have to also have some realism on getting onto the field, and it doesn't seem like there's a path for that.
Eve Pons is going to make his decision today about staying in the draft or returning to Tennessee. He has until midnight tonight to make that declaration. We've seen a number of players already decide to come back, including two at Gonzaga, which puts Gonzaga in position to be a national championship-type team. I think Eve Pons is returning to Tennessee. What do you think, Vince?
I would lean in that direction. I don't have any insight on what's going through his mind. You know, Rick Barnes kind of slid in back when they did that whole town hall thing that he's had the mindset to return, but he wanted to get more information. I would expect that because he can benefit, or he should be able to benefit with another year of development at Tennessee, even though this isn't a great draft. But, you know, we'll see how badly he wants to move on from college life. One other decision that was pretty big, And that was John Petty Jr. returning to Alabama and taking his name out of the draft. I know it might have been Jeff Goodman I think he was the one. Somebody nationally picked Alabama to win the conference next year.
Yeah.
And so maybe he had some insight that Petty was coming back, but this helps them next year for sure.
Yeah, it does. Isaiah Joe from Arkansas is returning. Also, a first-team All-American, Luca Garza with Iowa is returning. He averaged 23.9 points, 9.8 rebounds. So, again, we will hear from Pons, and I think there's a pretty good chance we'll know something before we get off the air today. We'll continue to follow that. Bill Battle, former Tennessee coach, former athletic director at Alabama, battling COVID-19. He's been hospitalized. Wish him the best. The Big 12, the presidents are going to go over four or five scheduling options today. They're expected to make a decision later today. We'll see. Then the NCAA Board of Governors is going to discuss canceling or postponing NCAA Fall Championships. There are 22 sports. This includes the FCS in football. So there's a chance that they will either cancel that or postpone that until the spring. That's a big decision. We'll see what direction they go. Oh, and by the way, some of the Pac, I don't know if the players pointed this out, but I saw this as regarding the Pac-12. The commissioner, Larry Scott, he makes $5.7 million a year. Now, he agreed to take a cut to $470,000. But I think what happens is a lot of these student-athletes, and football players in particular, they see the money that these guys are making, like a commissioner or like a football coach, and they're thinking, we should get a cut of that too. So that's got to get your attention. I don't know what Greg Sankey makes at the SEC. I don't think it's near $5.7 million, but certainly he makes a pretty hefty salary, but nothing close to that, I wouldn't think. All right, as far as the NFL, Juwan James, former Tennessee star offensive tackle, he's with the Denver Broncos. He's opting out. That's going to cost him $10 million this year. He is among about, and I'm going to say about because I don't know what's happened in the last 30 minutes, there are about 43 players that have opted out so far, 8 for New England. And Devin McCourty, New England defensive back, ripped the NFL for trying to move the opt-out deadline to either Wednesday or Thursday. Now, what the deal is, there was a side deal on some type of agreement with the players and the owners that you would have until 1 week after the deal is signed. Well, the deal has still not been signed. And so because it's still not signed, theoretically, players have until August the 10th to make that decision if it gets signed today. But since it hadn't been signed and the 7-day window is out there, then you've got more players that could opt out. McCourty's saying that the NFL is trying to rush this to push up the opt-out date so that you won't have as many players opting out. What are your thoughts on this, Vince?
Well, and I've also heard the other way around, that the players' union is intentionally stalling to give more players the opportunity to opt out because they thought the deadline was too soon. So both of them are accusing the other side of you know, wrongdoing in terms of that date. It's supposed to be, you know, that week window after they sign it, and you know, both sides aren't happy with it. I think it should be pretty soon in when they decide. I mean, they've been in the facilities for a week plus. Teams have to prepare for the season and know what sort of personnel they're going to have. Is this a health concern for you? How do you feel about it? Those things shouldn't take you too long into being in the complex for you to make that judgment on whether it scares you or whether you have a level of comfort with it, or if there are other family reasons that made your mind up anyway. I don't know that they should be allowed to wait a much longer period of time. Maybe they can wait a few more days, whatever. But I think it should happen pretty soon to where, all right, you in, you're out, let's go, pretty soon.
Did I misunderstand you? So the players want the date delayed. Did you say the players want it sooner?
What? No. The owners think that the players are stalling in an agreement.
Yeah.
So
stalling the agreement.
The agreement The deadline isn't enacted yet. So while the owners think that while the players think that the owners are trying to rush them so they can get that opt-out deadlines because they want to know now, the players seemingly want more time. So they think that they're stalling to push that back. So
gotcha.
It's kind of messy.
Okay. Jets linebacker C.J. Mosley, among those opting out, he is the highest paid Jet at $16 million a year. However, my first thought was he's losing $16 million. He got a $10 million roster bonus in March. So even if he doesn't play, he's not losing $16 million. He'd be losing $6 million since he got the roster bonus. I wonder if the Jets will try to reclaim any of that roster bonus.
Probably not.
Well, they may try to reclaim it. Right. Probably won't get it. But and another big name, Matt Stafford, he's on the reserve virus list. That doesn't mean he's got COVID-19, but it does mean he either has the virus or he was around somebody that did get the virus. Major League Baseball, I guess the early voting for the MVP might be Aaron Judge. He's hit a home run in five games in a row. He's got six home runs. He led the Yankees to another win over Boston. They've defeated Boston now 11 of the last 12 meetings. And St. Louis had 6 of 58 that have been tested that were infected. Those are players and personnel, and so they're not expected to play another game until later this week. There have now been 24 games postponed by baseball, although in the last hour or so that could have changed, but that was the last number that I had. And there have been 25 positive tests among baseball players and personnel. Nick Senzel gets 3 more hits and a doubleheader yesterday. He's on a 4-game hit streak. He's got 5 extra base hits during that tenure, and he's got 4 doubles and a home run during that time frame. The Rockets ended up shooting 61 threes in a game against Milwaukee. I think they beat Milwaukee in that game. They tied for the most 3-point attempts in an NBA game. Their style of play is just so unusual. They can be very tough to defend, and I did see somebody pick the Rockets to win it because they think that that style of play during this bubble situation is going to work in the Rockets' favor. I think it's going to catch up to them. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think they can sustain it. Look, it's about defense, Jimmy, because they against Dallas, where they gave up, I think, 1,000,003 points in that game, Dallas and Houston, and they couldn't rebound, they couldn't defend. I mean, it was a awful showing. So that is not conducive to give 149 points. Actually won the game 153 to 149, but you know they've defended much better against Milwaukee, and so if they can defend with that small lineup, then they can beat a lot of teams. And James Harden didn't have an amazing game against Milwaukee either, but because they were defending and doing other things, that they were able to play and win. But to me, I don't think you can sustain the defense against other matchups and other teams that can really score. And Milwaukee typically can, but I don't think they can sustain that. And I look, they got talent, elite talent at the top, but I don't think you can win with that small lineup because the inconsistencies on defense.
A couple other quick notes. U.S. Open in tennis, Nick Kyrgios has opted out. He's among many that have opted out or that will opt out of that tournament. Justin Thomas wins the St. Jude tournament. He has now ascended back to the number one spot in the world. And the PGA is going to be at Harding Park in San Francisco. Tiger Woods has played one event since the restart. He has entered this tournament. He played a practice round on Sunday. He has had only 21 rounds of golf that he has played on the PGA Tour since he played in his last major. I don't expect him to be real sharp, but we shall see. Those are our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters. When we come back, we'll have more. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. This is Sports Talk 99.1, the sports animal.
If it weren't for sports,
we'd be forced to play that crap other stations play.
Anybody need that?
Nobody.
99.1, the sports animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Farrar. Just a couple of the notes we want to cover. Had a friend of mine, he's known very well in the golfing community and around town as a Tennessee fan. His name is Sam Bounds. Sam Bounds passed away over the weekend. He's a Marine, Love going to Tennessee basketball games. If you were in Hawaii, you probably saw him there a while back. If you were in New York, you probably saw him in a game there. He loved following and watching the Vols and men's basketball. Great man. As a Marine, he'll have a military service on Thursday. But our thoughts and prayers with the family of Sam Bounds. As far as the Major League Baseball, there was a bizarre case yesterday with Yiannis Cespedes. He went AWOL for a while. Vince, they couldn't find him. They didn't know where he was. Finally, after hours of concern, his agent called the Braves during the game and said, called the Mets during the game and said, hey, by the way, he has decided to opt out, which is a heck of a way to do it rather than just tell somebody instead of them worrying about you for hours.
Yeah, it's unprofessional. And that guy, we better not hear stories about him since he's opted out of, like, being at some strip club getting wings or whatever. But to not communicate with your team, like, how hard is that? And to do one, two, what could possibly run through your mind to say, I'm not going to let him know. I'm not going to play anyway. I'm not going to let him know. Like, how does that even register to be okay, not have any guilt towards it? What could you be doing that's more important than letting them know? They're going to respect your decision. Lorenzo Cain did it in season a few days ago. There's others that have decided during the season that the level of concern has gotten too high that they're going to shut it down, and that's fine. But to just disappear and then have your agent say something late in the game doesn't fly. And he, you know, to me, he better just stick in his house and be careful and safe, because if he now is seen out doing his own thing when he opted out in this way, that's going to be an awful look. Not saying he's going to do that, but just unprofessional around, all the way around.
Another NFL head coach has tested positive. That's Doug Peterson with Philadelphia. Deuce Daly has taken over as the active coach. Sean Payton was the other head coach, and that was way early in the process when he contracted the virus. The Clippers beat New Orleans 126-103. They hit 25 threes. Zion Williamson, 7 points in 14 minutes. Williamson said he is not frustrated by his lack of playing time, but he wants to play more. Well, yeah, he's frustrated. And I wonder if New Orleans, I don't know if there's anything going on physically with Zion Williamson, but if the Pelicans want to make the playoffs, he can't play 14 minutes. He needs to play closer to 24 or 30 minutes. But they are protecting him at this point. And maybe there's a good reason, Vince, but I don't know how you expect to win if you're going to put one of your best players on the bench and not give him many minutes.
Yeah, I watched that game amongst many this weekend and the return to the NBA. And based on how they played as a team, especially from the second quarter on when the Clippers jumped on him early, but like midway through the second quarter, the Pelicans looked like they were done. And they didn't play like they wanted to make the playoffs or try to win that game, and just got completely annihilated in that game. So I also, during that, in the first half, they interviewed, I believe it was one of the trainers, might have been the head trainer, and Lisa Salters was asking him, so how come he can't get into shape like actually playing in the game? Which is what a lot of people are thinking. Like, okay, if this is just cardio, get your cardio running up and down the floor. You have to have him to have a chance. And he said it's the soft tissue injuries that are much greater when you are playing fatigued and fighting your way through that. So they said this is a similar plan than what we have for everybody, what everybody is comfortable with. So that's why we're doing it this way. We don't want to have those setbacks, but you know, maybe that's just their philosophy, thinking long term. But the way they've lost those first couple of games and the way they played when they were getting destroyed by the Clippers, it didn't look like they were going anywhere. The only thing in their favor, Jimmy, is they play the teams in front of them like Memphis and others. They have some head-to-head matchups with those teams ahead of them. But they almost have to run the table the rest of the way. And if you don't have much more of Zion Williamson and he needs to be effective, those head-to-head matchups won't matter. They got to get him on the floor and be much and have him be effective.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm Jimmy Himes. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. This is Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal. Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar, pitch inning for John Wilkerson. Pleased now to be joined by Dr. Jerry Punch with ESPN. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. Doc, I'm wearing some New Balance. I bet you are too.
Absolutely, guys. Good to be with you. I know I don't go anywhere without my New Balances. I get a lot of people in the airport or see me. They say, you do wear these things all the time. I say, I wear them because I like to work out in them. I like to travel in them. They're comfortable. They're good for my feet. More importantly, they're good for my back. I used to have low back pain when I would sit in airplane seats a long time or walk carrying bags. And now, and I asked the folks at New Balance, I said, how can a shoe, I'm a medical doctor, how can a shoe make that big a difference? He said, oh, it does. They're wide, they're stable, they're comfortable, especially if they're fit perfectly, which is exactly what the folks at New Balance of Knoxville will do if you go by. And Sharon and all her great staff, David and everyone there, will do a wonderful job of fitting you perfectly over 75 different models. And it's for all ages. So we're thrilled that they are a sponsor of our show. And I absolutely believe in the product 100%.
Doc, we've got Brad Keselowski gets the win at New Hampshire. He has now had at least three wins 5 years in a row. Talk about his win and talk about his consistency.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's showing this year. You know, I was around when Brad started out with Penske back in 2010, and he just was on fire. Won a Cup Series title. He won a back then what was a Busch Series title, a Nationwide title, then a Cup Series title, and he grew up from being around his mom and his dad racing, mom and dad at the racetrack every weekend, understanding that it's not where you start, it's where you finish. And so yesterday was a prime example. He has been on fire this year, third win of the year. Remember Penske shuffled the crew chiefs up. And now Brad Keselowski, on top of getting his third win of the year, has his seventh consecutive top five finish in the last seven races. He's got two wins, and the rest of them are at least top five. So he's done an incredible job just being very, 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 very consistent. And he drove his guts out yesterday. He and Denny Hamlin were back and forth. Typically, the New Hampshire track, the Magic Mile, isn't known for really great battles side by side. But yesterday was the exception to the rule because there were over 20 lead changes. He and Denny Hamlin put on a great battle. He and Ryan Blaney were there. And, of course, in the final segment, Keselowski pulls away to win it by almost a couple of seconds. But a great afternoon for racing. I tell you what, I'm not sure if I was NASCAR, I'd change anything because the racing has been really good. Kudos to Goodyear for putting out a tire that gives up, and so the racing is good. The new downforce package they've got, the 750 horsepower engine package they've got, is really good. It's allowed a lot of passing. But Keselowski, and we've been talking every week, Jimmy, about him and Vince about Keselowski being the wild card, being the number one free agent in NASCAR. Maybe would he go to the 48 car? Maybe would he go here, go there? Because he had not been offered and had not signed to return with Penske. That changed an hour ago. He has now been offered and accepted an extension to stay with Penske Racing, so he'll be in that two car for next year. And they didn't say how long the terms were for, but this goes to show you what out driving people and just spanking the field like he did yesterday can do for your contract.
Well, and we had talked for a lot of this year about this is the Hamlin Harvick show, but you got to add Brad Keselowski to that list, don't you?
You really do. I mean, Hamlin's got 5 wins, Harvick has 4, and now Keselowski has 3. And Kevin Harvick didn't have a great day yesterday by Kevin Harvick standards. He ended up finishing 5th. But as it goes to show you, when you can have an off day, I mean, Harvick had won 2 in a row up there in New Hampshire. He's really good on flat racetracks. When you can have, quote, a bad day and finish 5th, they decided to stay out, and they made a call to stay out. Crew chief took full responsibility. The call could have gone either way, quite honestly. I don't think the crew chief needs to blame himself, but Harvick has to make an extra stop, come from the back of the pack, take the wave around, and ends up getting back to 5th place. So not a bad day for him, not typically what he's seen up there. But, yeah, Hamlin, Harvick, Keselowski, those guys, I mean, any of those three, those are the 3 hot teams right now. And then on the other end of the spectrum, poor Kyle Busch. I don't think I've ever said poor Kyle Busch because Kyle's normally winning or finishing 2nd or, you know, it's been 13 months. In the last 13 months, let me put it this way, in the last 13 months, Kyle Busch has 1 Cup Series win. And that was the finale last year at Homestead. Of course, you win when you have to, and that was the championship race. He won it and became the series champion for the 2nd time. Otherwise, he struggled finding victory lane, which is unheard of given the kind of talent he's got.
So why do you think that is with Kyle Busch? Is there anything you would pin that on?
I don't know. Boy, I'm sure everybody's got different ideas. No one can pin it down. You got a talented team. You got Denny Hamlin, his teammate. That's one of the best cars, you know, every week in and out as a factor to win. Kyle there's either a mistake on the in the pits. Kyle bounces it off the wall like he did last week at Kansas. He scrapes the side of the car. Mistakes. I mean, uncharacteristic mistakes by very talented teams. You have those years where, you know, you've seen NFL teams, Major League Baseball teams, those have all the same talent that wins a World Series the year before, and the next year they're overthrowing, you know, simple ground balls to first base, and they're, you know, striking out and making, you know, just doing things that silly things they wouldn't do. And for whatever reason, now Kyle's still should be comfortably, you know, in, unless something drastic happens, in the in position to make the playoffs, but. You know, he hasn't won a race, and you know, that could change. But, boy, you know, that's, you know, it's got to be just so frustrating for him, as competitive as he is, not to be able to get there, especially when your teammates are right there knocking on the door every week or winning like Denny Hamlin is.
Doc, I was going to ask you about the contract extension for Keselowski. You mentioned that he would have been the top free agent out there. Who would be now next in line now that Brad has this new deal?
Well, no one knows what Kyle Larson's going to do. Does he come back? You know, he's been quietly going about his mending his ways and trying to show people that, you know, Kyle Larson's, I think his mom is Japanese. So he came up through the diversity program. So he should be, of all people, he should understand diversity. He's been doing a lot of things away from NASCAR, not beating his chest saying, look at me here, I'm doing this and I'm doing that, but quietly doing those kind of things. I think he's certainly earning his way back. So does he come back and get in a car? The question was, is Jimmy Johnson not going to race full-time next year? Who are they going to put in the 48 car? We mentioned last week that they still have Ally on board for sponsorship. That car is fully sponsored next year. You know, do they bring, you know, Bowman from the 88 car over because that car doesn't have a full sponsorship next year? Do they condense or downsize from 4 teams to 3 at Hendrick Motorsports and put Alex Bowman in the 48 car? There's a discussion this week about Bubba Wallace. Bubba Wallace's stock has risen for lots of reasons, and, you know, there's some discussions. There's a lot of corporations out there that got a chance to see Bubba when at Talladega, with the show of support he got from his teammates, and now there's people jumping up saying, hey, this kid needs a chance. He's driving for an underfunded team, even though it's owned by the legend Richard Petty. He's part owner, I should say, but they don't have a lot of funding. So now there are people who want to jump up and sponsor Bubba next year. If you've got sponsorship money to spend, you can pretty much name your own tune. The word is, you know, Ganassi may be interested in putting Bubba in the 42 car. You know, there's some discussion at Hendrick. The 43 team, Richard Petty's team, has offered Bubba an ownership stake, it's been reported. Now, I haven't seen him specifically say that's happened, but it's been reported that they've offered Bubba a chance to be a part owner of the 43 team if he will stay and bring sponsorship. So there's a couple of fast food chains. There's several other major companies that are interested in sponsoring Bubba. So now he enters the mix as a free agent. So and then there's the young drivers that are in the Xfinity Series. Chase Briscoe, who has been winning left and right, impressing people. He drives for Stewart Haas Racing. Does he go and take the 14 car away from Clint Bowyer? Does Bowyer stay put? Bowyer's a veteran, but he finished 18th yesterday. Likeable, fan favorite, outgoing, energetic, but he's not winning. And Briscoe is winning, and he's younger. And does he take that ride? And then what happens to Clint Bowyer? Or does he retire and become a broadcaster? There's so many moving parts that are starting to really float to the top now over the last 7 days. And it's going to get even more interesting over between now and probably the end of August.
That's Dr. Jerry Punch. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Farrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Looks like you've been missing a lot of work lately.
I wouldn't say I've been missing it, Bob.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Farrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Punch of ESPN, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. Doc, the SEC made the announcement they're going 10 conference games only, and I wonder, with the later start, September the 26th, they're pushing it back about 3 weeks, SEC championship game being pushed back 2 weeks, does this make you more optimistic that we'll have a season, or do you still have perhaps a wait-and-see outlook on college football this fall?
Well, I'm optimistic. I've always been optimistic, Jimmy. I'm also realistic in that, you know, we have to make sure we do things the right way. We realize the coronavirus, so the way we control the coronavirus is limit spread, which is social distancing, masks, et cetera, all the things we found were able to get our hands on, get our arms around back in April. With that said, I think Greg Sankey did a nice job. And you know, the old saying is control the things you can control. And I think the conference-only schedule is a very nice compromise by him and the school presidents, the athletic directors, because you want to control. You pretty much say we can control what happens inside the SEC. We know our member institutions will do everything they can to keep our athletes and our officials and our coaches and our fans as safe as possible. But when you go outside the school to some of the non-conference opponents, especially the smaller schools that may not have the financial wherewithal to do a weekly test or to be able to separate their players when they travel with multiple extra rooms, et cetera, that could be a concern. So I get Greg Sankey's desire to want to limit it to conference play. So I'm very optimistic there that'll happen. The ACC obviously decided to go with an 11-game schedule, a 10-game conference schedule, adding Notre Dame in the mix for 10 conference games. So makes them eligible for a conference championship. And in one non-conference game, provided that one non-conference game be in-state so you don't travel, which allowed them to play the Georgia-Georgia Tech rivalry game and the Florida-Florida State rivalry game as a non-conference in Clemson, South Carolina. That preserved those rivalries, but they had to be in-state. So I can see how that works specifically for the ACC, whereas this conference-only schedule, I think, will work really well if we can continue to be able to get our arms around what's happening with the surge in the coronavirus and be able to get a later start. I think the later start is helpful, and I think the conference-only schedule is helpful in terms of us being able to get college football up and running.
Let's go to the phones where Kevin is our first caller for Dr. Punch. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Punch, I have a question for you.
Okay.
you know, if you go, I'm one of the fans that NASCAR has lost this year. One of the many. I'm heavily involved in dirt track racing, the shock side of it. And, you know, you go to youth sports, youth football, youth baseball, that's the lifeblood of college and NFL. How do you think NASCAR is going to be able to survive? I go to dirt track, and the racers, the fans, they're all turned off. They're not tuned into NASCAR anymore. NASCAR has cut the roots off of the tree. And how do they think that sport's going to survive when they've turned their back on their base? When they've just, and I'm saying this because I know I'm out there every week. I don't know one thing. Hey, we're going to watch the Cup race this week. Nobody cares anymore. Nobody's going. How are they going to survive? How do you think they're going to survive? Yeah.
Well, I think that's been a situation that's been ongoing for like the last 2 years with NASCAR. For me, I see the racing with what they were forced to do this year being better than it's been with no qualifying and no practice. I thought there's so many young drivers in the mix in the truck series and the Xfinity series that the roots were pretty fertile. I don't know about the relationship with some of the short trucks. Why do you think recently they've turned their backs? I thought just the opposite. I thought Jim France coming on board and his leadership, he's a short track guy and an entry level, track guy, at heart. He grew up there. I thought of all people, he would try to make sure they embrace the short tracks for NASCAR.
Well, and not to like the rebel flag. No, I'm not racist. I'm not for slavery and everything because the flag doesn't stand. What I would challenge you is go to some dirt tracks, and you'll find out the distaste and discord. I mean, nobody's going to NASCAR races anymore. I haven't been going for years anyways, but I'm telling you, Doc, they have. We're not talking about the NASCAR series of truck and midget. I'm talking about the grassroots. Everyday American that's out going to dirt tracks is turned off by NASCAR. Their stance on the way, the political stance they've took, the things they've done, they have turned off the average fan. And when these tracks open back up and COVID's gone, they think attendance was low years ago. Just wait and see. Because we used to go to dirt tracks. I've been going my whole life on Friday and Saturday night. We talked about the Cup race coming up on Sunday. Nobody cares now. I from one to the other, nobody cares. And if you were out there seeing it, you would be alarmed by it as well. From the stands,
yeah.
I'm telling you, it's real.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. I've heard that. And I don't know what the answer is. You know, I certainly have heard this, that I have received personal phone calls from a number of former NASCAR owners and fans, who have had the same sentiments. And my only hope is that, Jim France's leadership and, the people there, they can somehow, over the period of time change that. I don't know. I mean, I'm like you. When I would go to a short track race, and I haven't been recently, but when I would go to Hickory Speedway or Asheboro, or one of the tracks that I would go to, Volusia County Speedway in Florida, which is the big dirt track down Barberville there right now from where I live. You know, people, everybody, all they could talk about was what was going to happen on Sunday at the Cup race. But that passion is not there, and I'm not really sure specifically why or what. If it's the political stances NASCAR has made, the statements they've made, or I'm not sure exactly. But in my opinion, this is my opinion, I think the racing on the track, the Cup Series races, in the last 6 or 8 weeks have been better than they've been in years. I think they're really, I mean, we've never seen that many lead changes at New Hampshire. It was incredible. I mean, this is New Hampshire, one of the most boring tracks to go to, and yet they were mixing it up in the rule package and the tires and everything that they went for. It was really, really, I mean, the announcers were hoarse before the race was halfway done because there were so many lead changes. I'm hoping that maybe the product itself will bring some fans back. I don't know.
That's Doc Punch. If you want to ask a question, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. His appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville, the fit specialist. When we come back, we'll have more with him. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. This is Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.